Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Different Strokes for Different Folks, to find common ground and take it to the next level with David Clark here on Blog Talk Radio. Each week, the show will encourage you to keep an open mind and prepare to open the door to new understandings. We will have an exciting array of diverse guests who will point up the fact that we are all spiritual beings having a human experience. Now your host, David Clark.
Welcome to Different Strokes for Different Folks, where we will indeed be finding common ground and taking it to the next level. I'm your host, David Clark. I'm a spiritual adventurer, and I suggest you become the same. This show will encourage you to keep an open mind and prepare to open the door to new understandings. It's my hope that you will come to see that despite our seeming differences, we're all basically the same. This is a no-holds-barred show. My guests will have differing spiritual belief systems, and some will have no spiritual beliefs. You may or you may not agree with things that are said. What I'd ask you to do is keep an open mind. This way you can see where you can find common ground so that you can relate rather than compare yourself to others. Now tonight I'd like you to join my guest David Homick, who is the author of a metaphysical novel, and his novel is called A Lifetime Last Night. After years of working in the banking industry in central New York, David left his suits behind for a more casual gig as a freelance web designer. He says, "I love the creative aspect of my work, which was not something that was encouraged growing up. Perhaps it's all that pent-up creative energy that has motivated him to express himself now between the covers of a book. It took him 54 years to pick up the pen, or in this case, a laptop, and start writing his first novel. That's a lot of life experience to draw on, and much of his inspiration comes from his recent interest in spiritual, metaphysical, and so-called paranormal activity. A Lifetime Last Night is full of metaphysical wisdom and inspiration that is woven into an intriguing contemporary love story. One of the underlying themes of the story, as well as his life, was inspired by a favorite quote from George Eliot, "It's never too late to be what we might have been." A second novel is yet untitled, as of this writing, is currently in the works. It's Who I Am Now, I'll Never Stop Writing. Homick dreams of quitting his day job to pursue his writing career full-time, and I certainly wish him the best, because he's written what appears to be a brilliant book, and it's very well received, and I'd like to introduce David. David, how are you tonight?
I'm doing fine, thank you, and thank you for having me.
I'm glad to have you. You came with some good recommendations from my friend Beth Miller, and my only regret connected to Beth is that she's not doing her show now, because I think she did a wonderful job, and you did a nice interview with her. So it's nice to have you on the show.
Well, thank you. It's nice to be here.
Yeah. So, David, what sparked your spiritual interest that got you going and eventually got you on the trail of writing this first book of yours that came out?
Well, interestingly enough, it was the book The Secret. It was to me, that was like an appetizer to the feast that lay ahead. I was raised Catholic, pretty strict parents in that regard. So I grew up, I went to Catholic school for 8 years, through eighth grade. But somewhere along the way, I start questioning things. But it was just, I was caught up in family, raising my kids, working to pay the bills and all that kind of stuff. So the years just kind of slipped by. And then one day I came home from work and my wife said, you know, I recorded this episode of Oprah that I want you to see. She said, I thought it was very interesting. So I watched it, and it was the one where Rhonda Byrne was on, and when she was talking about the book The Secret. And something happened, you know, when I start thinking about the idea that our thoughts become things and that everything is generated from this thought energy. And it just, I kind of went crazy with the idea. I mean, I got very interested in quantum physics, you know, because that plays in very heavily with this whole idea. And I started reading books by, you know, Wayne Dyer and Marianne Williamson and people that were embracing that. And lo and behold, they had been for years. And it was, I was like, why am I just hearing this now? You know, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, this is something that should be taught to kids in school.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I'm on a cell phone, and sometimes the delay is tricky, but. I started reading books. I think I read that was in February, and I think I read about 33 books that year.
Wow.
You know, all nonfiction, all about quantum physics, about, you know, the thoughts become things, Esther Hicks, you know, those people that were channeling. I thought, wow, this channeling thing is really cool. I mean, it was like getting information from the horse's mouth, so to speak. So I got very interested in that. And it was 2007, maybe 2008, something like that. So that went on for a couple of years. As a matter of fact, the following year, I did A Course in Miracles. The whole year, you know, I went through the 365-day thing. And I actually started writing a blog in 2010 called Living in a Virtual Reality. Because I began to realize that everything we see here is kind of this virtual reality. You know, it's not real. So this blog, I think I only did it for a few months. Actually, it's still out there, livinginavirtualreality.com. It was just a bunch of anecdotes and spiritual types of concepts that I wrote about, and so that was probably my first foray into writing. I hadn't really thought about writing a book, a novel. As a matter of fact, at that time, I was considering writing. I decided I was going to write a nonfiction book, you know, a spiritual nonfiction book. But God, there were so many of them, and I didn't have like so many authors will have a this epiphany, this defining moment, this tragedy that really changed their life, or a near-death experience or something. And I really didn't have anything like that. So I think someone once said to me that, you know, it's almost like, yeah, these things are great and a lot of people haven't heard them, but as far as a book, you're kind of just regurgitating the same stuff that's out there unless you have some kind of different take on it or some kind of personal experience that is unique. So that kind of dissuaded me a little bit from that. But I guess there was something in there that wanted to come out. And I found a way to use these concepts that I learned, in writing a novel. And it didn't really start out that way. It started out really as a therapeutic, as a cathartic type of thing after my wife and I separated back in 2010. And for the first year, was tough. My wife, you know, took it pretty hard that first year, and I was actually told by a spiritualist that I see that one of the reasons that I wasn't as affected as much initially is that through that first year was her year to feel this, to go through this. And one of us needed to be strong to hold it together. Um, so that was me the first year, and I guess it kind of did a little bit of a flip-flop the second year, because I had this kind of emotional event right about at the turn of a year afterwards. And I remember being, I wouldn't call it depressed, but I was very emotionally affected, and I'm not a very emotional, I never had been a very emotional person. But I found myself having all these emotions, and, you know, in the middle of the afternoon, I'm laying on my couch taking a nap instead of working, and I just lost motivation. I just didn't know, you know, what to do. So I remember it was a Wednesday night. I was going to bed on a Wednesday night, and I was laying in bed and saying, look, something's got to give here. I was talking to my spirit guides and talking to anybody who will listen. Please, I need something. I need some motivation. I can't keep doing this, you know. Bam, Thursday morning I started writing that book. So to me it was really an answer to a prayer, if you will, to a request that I needed help. And the book really started out somewhat autobiographical. You know, you write what you know. So I was writing scenes, and most of those aren't in the book anymore. The book's 86,000 words, and I bet you there's another 50,000 that either didn't make it or were in, and now they're out. But the writing really helped me, and as I wrote, these emotions came out that I never knew I had or I could even possess. I mean, like I said, I wasn't really an emotional guy, and my ex-wife can attest to that. But something changed, Dave. Something changed. And so this idea just kind of morphed over the next year. It took me 2 years to write the book and another year to revise it, get it edited. I had it professionally edited, actually twice. The first person, I didn't care for the way that went. And I found somebody else, and they did a bang-up job. They did a great job. Actually, her name's Talia Newland. She lives in Australia, believe it or not. So we used to do that time difference thing, you know, where she was sleeping when I was awake and that kind of thing. We did everything by email, and it worked out great. She was it was like taking a writing class. I mean, she explained things to me. I mean, my writing was, I guess it wasn't bad to begin with, but there were some weaknesses that I had and some things I had to go back and add in. You know, I guess she hit me up on I'm a pretty down cut to the chase kind of person. So I wasn't putting in enough description of scenes and things that were going on or existing around the action in the book. So she hit me up on some of those, and I had to go add some things back in. But she did a great job, and I told her she's going to be editing all my books. So, but
how did you ever find her?
Well, actually, I was looking for reviews. I was looking for people to review the book, a manuscript. It wasn't a book yet. And she runs a site called Awesome Indies, which is actually, if you're a independent author, this is a great site. They have the highest standards I've ever seen of any of these sites. They do manuscript reviews and editing and all kinds of stuff, but they won't allow books on the site unless their certain standards are met, and they're very high. What they want to do is they want to make sure that the books on their sites are books that would be worthy of traditional publishing standards, because, as you know, there really are no standards for self-publishing. I mean, anybody can publish anything. And
that's
good and it's bad. You know, it's good and it's bad. Some of these books have given self-publishing a bad name, but we're starting to see more and more, I think, we're starting to see more and more that are showing that there are some really good authors out there and there are some really good books. People are getting serious, authors are getting serious about it. The authors that have their books professionally edited, which I think is a must. So many authors don't, but you can tell the difference in the ones that do. And And we're finding a lot of success stories. And hopefully, not hopefully, I'm going to be one of those success stories eventually. So, yeah, it's been a great experience. And I can't see myself ever not writing at this point.
I like your affirmative attitude. I like your vision for yourself. And I, too, am a great believer in the power of thought, how important it is to put out positive vibrations
mm-hmm.
and to embrace gratitude every step of the way. I love Esther Hicks. I've done the Course in Miracles. I can relate to so much of what you've said.
Okay.
And yeah, absolutely. Can you tell us a little bit about what the book is about for people that might be interested in reading it?
Well, I guess I would call it a thought-provoking story that weaves spiritual and metaphysical concepts into a contemporary love story. Perhaps it's a cautionary tale, too, for those who might become complacent in their relationships and even with life in general. It's about this guy, and you know, like I said, you write what you know. And this guy kind of became complacent in his relationship, in his marriage. You know, he was married 24 years, married his college sweetheart, and he started getting distracted, as you might imagine, as we all do, I think. I guess I shouldn't generalize, but I know it happened to me too. I mean, life just kind of has a way of taking over and eating up all your attention. So and also Richard was a little on the materialistic side, in that he was chasing an opportunity for to make some get rich quick kind of thing in the stock market. Doing that with a client of his that was a younger, beautiful woman type of thing, and it was this misunderstanding. Well, the deal went south, and he became even more distracted, and his wife started thinking he was having an affair, So she ends up throwing him out, and he ends up in a homeless shelter for certain reasons. And the homeless shelter is something, that I know. We have a local homeless shelter here that I've been volunteering at for about the last 7 years. And so he ends up in this homeless shelter, and he runs into this guy, a certain synchronistic type of events, where he runs into this other homeless person, an older guy, who they have this conversation. And I don't know if you've ever seen the movie The Family Man with Nicolas Cage. Have you ever seen that
No,
movie?
I have not. No.
Well, okay, well, how about, I know you've seen It's a Wonderful Life, all right?
Oh, absolutely,
this guy he meets is a little like Clarence, or a little like the guy named Cash in the Nicolas Cage movie. And he gives Richard an opportunity, a rare opportunity, to get a glimpse into a future where he continues making these bad decisions. He continues he gets to see the consequences of his actions. And I think that's what spurred it, is a comment he made to this guy. He said, "Wouldn't it be great if you could see the consequences of your actions while there was still time to change your mind?" And we rarely get an opportunity like that, as you know, because you make a decision and you move in that direction, and a lot of times there's no going back. So,
right.
So he made that comment, and so that's basically what he got. He woke up the next morning in this alternate reality, if you will. Very similar. I mean, not so much that he really thought too much of it. You know, it was basically business as usual, as he was concerned, although some things were a little bit off, But anyway, he continues on. He continues in this, it's kind of like a parallel universe where you kind of jump tracks, and you're living this life that could have been. They say that in quantum physics, for instance, if you take a die, a six-sided die, and you roll it. Well, there are parallel universes. There are six different outcomes in six different universes that go on based on each one of those outcomes. Now, the one you get to experience is the one that you put your attention into. And in this case, for instance, you roll a die and you know, the number five comes up. Well, that's where you're headed. However, the other five are still there in this unseen dimension, you know, this metaphysical, if you will, beyond physical. So, but anyway, he gets to live out a whole bunch of stuff goes on in this other place. And it's kind of like these other movies where he learns some valuable lessons he may not have learned. You know, it's kind of a wake-up call. I don't want to give too much of it away, but it's
no, and I don't want you to do that either. I'm curious as to how you came up with the premise and what the writing process was like. Did you have an outline in your mind as you constructed the book, or how did it flow for you?
Dave, I'm pretty much of a pantser. At least I was on that book. I mean, I wrote it by the seat of my pants. First thing I wrote, some of the first scenes I wrote, like I said, didn't get into the book, but I would have these flashes of genius. I believe they were inspired, and I have some spirit guides that are muses for me, and I know some of their names thanks to this intuitive that I've mentioned. She's really great. Actually, she's from Lafayette. You may know her, Sheila Applegate. But
I've heard her. Yes, I do. I don't know her personally, but I'm familiar with her.
We got to be good friends. As a matter of fact, I think it started when I did a couple websites for her, and we got to working together, and we ended up actually bartering some stuff, you know, some website stuff for some sessions, and it was really great. So I would go see her and get kind of, we called it get a tune up, you know, before a big writing session, because I actually have done a lot of my writing in Canada. A friend of mine, actually a cousin of mine, who has his parents have a lake house up in Canada, and there's no internet, no cell phone. We go up there for 4 or 5 days, and we write, and we cook out, we eat, we write. I mean, I'm talking, 14, 15 hours a day sometimes, and it's the end of the day. It's like, oh my God, where did that go? I want to keep going. That's sometimes, you know. So
I can absolutely relate to that. I follow the same sort of pattern that you do. I write from a place of pure inspiration, and it's as if I'm taking dictation. I don't know how you do it, but I find that the words come into my head, and I talk the story out loud, and then I type what I'm actually taking as dictation. Yeah,
I don't do the talking out loud, but most of my inspiration comes in dialogue. I really like writing dialogue. It's probably my favorite.
I do too.
And what will happen is I will be sitting and meditating or having my coffee in the morning and thinking about it, and all of a sudden, dialogue going on. One person says this, and then the other one, and then we're back and forth, and it's like, whoa, go get the laptop because, you know, you need to write this down. And it's great because the flexibility of the job that I have, I work out of my apartment. I mean, I don't have to be someplace at 9 o'clock in the morning. So if I get up and I have this ritual every morning where I get my coffee and I sit and I, you know, semi-meditate and think about things. A lot of times I'll think about what's going on in my book. And if something really hits me, I get some dialogue going and I've got a scene going, I'll write. You know, I'll write till noon and then I'll go to work. So, you know, that flexibility has really helped me out a lot. But, and then sometimes, you were talking about inspiration, sometimes I, you know, you, I wouldn't say I've ever really had a difficult or a bad writer's block. You know, so many people talk about writer's block, and, I stared at the empty page and I couldn't write anything. I mean, there are times there's a little bit of that going, but there are times when you get to a point in the story, as you probably know, where you're not sure what's going to go next or how this is going to fit or whatever. So there's mm-hmm. been morning, and especially on the weekends, that's my time. You know, I look forward to Saturday morning. So I get up, sometimes I'll get up on a Saturday morning, be ready to write, and I'll go, I don't know what the hell I'm going to write about today. Let me think. I ask my muses now. I'll say, and I call them nuggets. I'll say, okay, guys, let's, or whoever, like I said, some of them I know their names. I'll ask them personally. I have certain ones that are working on certain things. This one for this book, this one for that book, another one for the publication, that type of thing. So I'll say, all right, I need something today. I need a nugget. Send me a nugget. And I'll be darned, you know, probably within 5 or 10 minutes, I'm having a dialogue in my head or an idea comes up. And I remember one time in the first book, something really odd for me came up, and I was asking, all right, I need something. I need a nugget. I need something else for this book. This needs a little more oomph someplace. And all of a sudden, the words popped into my head, dog, a dog. I was like, dog. Now, I've never had a dog when I was a child. I'm not really a pet person. But this idea mm-hmm. came in. It's like, they should have a dog. The dog is going to add something to this. The dog represents unconditional love. And there can be, you can work this in so many ways. And I thought, okay, I'm going to do that. But I didn't know that much about it. So you know what I did? I went down to the SPCA and I told them, I'd like to volunteer and I'll walk dogs for you. I did that for a couple months. I went down there. I was like all thumbs. I didn't know what to do with these dogs, but I was learning. I wanted to kind of study them and see how they react to certain things and just how you can, you know, have a conversation with them or whatever, just to learn about that so I would know a little bit about what I'm writing. So that I thought was a pretty interesting one that was pure inspiration because that was not anything I would have thought of on my own. Probably one of the farthest things I would think of for a story like that, being, you know, the way I was brought up and not being a pet person. Yeah, there's a lot of that goes on, and it's just all inspiration, and I love it. And I thank them all the time. And I get one of the ways we communicate, unlike a Sheila Applegate who can just open up the channel and she can basically see these guides, and I mean, she tells me what they're wearing and what they're what's going on and what they're telling me, you know, exact like having a conversation. I haven't gotten to that place yet. I understand that everybody can, but it's just a matter of awareness and a matter of, exercising that spiritual muscle, if you will. But anyway, yes. I have found that there's a way that they communicate with me. And actually, Mary Blake, who I did an interview with about a week ago, she had a great term for it. I used to say that I would get a hit or I would get a chill. And it's this big, if you ever felt a chill that runs up your back and down your arms and right up to the top of your head, you know, like a cold breeze just blew up your shirt. And she calls them truth chills. And that's a great term because they've always been a validation for me. If I've asked a question or if I had a thought and I was thinking about something and all of a sudden, out of nowhere, it could be 90 degrees out, and I've got this big chill running up my back. And it's like, oh, okay, thank you. Thank you for that validation. It's like they pat you on the back and said, yep, you're going in the right direction. I'd love that. I'd love that. And one of the things that you mentioned, too, earlier, which is gratitude, is very important. I'm always expressing my gratitude, you know, for this. And I... as a matter of fact, when I talk about my book, and I don't do this in public as much because, you know, sometimes talking about these things is difficult in public, but it's always our book. It's not my book. It's our book. You know, it's our story. It's, it's because I don't feel like I did it alone. And like you said, you feel like dictation, or like I said, I feel like a scribe sometimes. That these wonderful ideas are coming down, and to some extent, I mean, I'm not out of the picture totally. I mean, I'm a smart guy, and I've studied the craft a lot with writing, so I'm sure there's things that I add to it along the way, but the inspiration, the story, it all comes to me. And another thing I believe is as I'm sure you're aware, and about time, the illusion of time, that there is no past, there is no present, it's all now. And if you think about that, that means my book's already written, you know? Well, this one is, but I mean, now it's in the form, but they've all been written, because there is no future. It's all happening now. We just don't understand that. And in these limited physical bodies and minds, we can't understand that. But yeah, so that book is there. It's done. And you know what? That is kind of inspiration in and of itself. You know, this book is awesome. It's already written. I just have to tap into that energy. I just have to, you know, help me tap into that. Give me some inspiration here, and I will put it down on the paper, and we'll get this done. So all my books are written. You know, there might be a dozen of them, Dave, and they're all written. I just need to bring them into form. So I'm kind of that link between the physical and the non-physical, I guess. Yeah, I mean, you know what? I never put it that way, but I just thought of that now. But that's pretty cool. You know, the link from a non-physical. What?
Yeah, that is cool. And you said there might be a dozen of them. There may be several dozen of them. I know Mary Blake too. And Mary collaborated with me for a little while on one of my books. And I don't know if she talked to you about Stardust, but that's one of her muses.
Yes, she did mention that.
At any rate, there was this passage in the book where we were talking about, is the cup half empty or half full? And I said, it's overflowing. And Stardust's comment was, perhaps you need a larger vessel. So, you know, I think that we have to be careful how we limit ourselves. And might is perhaps a somewhat limiting word, and a dozen certainly is limiting. And I think your potential is unlimited from what you've been saying. And, you know, God help you pave the way to a future where you will be able to write full time. And I'm sure that when you start writing full time, there will be literally dozens of books in you. How's the second book coming?
It's coming great. It's about halfway done, right? I had a real jump. It happened really fast. That was one of the things. See, you know, you talk about limiting. I was concerned as I was finishing my first book. Wow. Okay. Well, I had a pretty cool story here, but God, maybe that was the only story I had. Well, what am I going to write about next? Because I want to keep writing.
Yeah.
And the idea just came to me. I don't know. All of a sudden, I had this idea, and I start taking some notes and thinking about it, and then it starts developing, and then I start writing it. And it was a little different than the first one. The first one is written in third person. This one is written in first person. The second book is, so it's I. And so it's a little different for me, but I like it. Actually, I like both of them. But it started it went together very quickly. Now I've done some rewrites of it along the way, because the ideas keep changing. And this one I wrote a lot up in Canada when we go up there. I would go talk to Sheila and get a tune-up. She would say, "Well, okay, we're here for a tune-up," you know, and she would. I'm not going to talk for a minute. She'd say, they're working on you to raise your vibration, because you need to be at a little higher level for this trip because of the things that you're going to work on. So we would do that, and then we would talk about it. I mean, I would kind of talk about the book. I would ask questions, or we would talk a little bit about the plot or about some of the characters, and it was just freaking awesome. I remember one point up there where I was just amazed at the quickness and the amount of information that could come flying in. Because a lot of times what I would do is, and this was with my cousin Dan, it's his parents' place, we would go up there, and he's writing a novel also, and we would, we'd get together sometimes to write and, run things by each other and storyboard and all that kind of stuff. And what would happen a lot of times, we'd be sitting here writing and, you'd kind of get to a place where, oh, God, I just got to think about this a little bit more. So we would go, one of us, let's say, Dan, I got to go meditate for a little bit, So I'd go down, I'd lay down on the couch, and I'd, think about where we're going with the story and ideas, and sometimes I'd fall asleep. We got to have a joke. It became a joke after a while. It's about, somebody falls asleep. You call them up, and it's like, what are you doing? Meditating? Now part of, oftentimes you would after a half an hour or so, okay, I kind of got an idea, or whatever. Half the time you'd get up and say, I didn't really come up with nothing. So you'd go back and have at it again with the laptop and see what you can do. But I remember in this one trip to Canada, that's why I said, look, I got to meditate. I laid down on the couch. I wasn't on there 5 minutes, and it was like floodgates opened. I mean, I wrote for hours after that. It was just, then things start coming, and it's just amazing. So, this second book is, all my books are going to be metaphysical. There's going to be, that's who I am. And so that's how I think. I don't think any other way. I find sometimes that I get bored if I can't be talking about this kind of stuff with people. You're at a party or something, and you just can't start talking about. Although my wife used to give me, she used to say, "Geez, don't," because I would start talking to people about stuff like that. Things that God, I don't know, just metaphysical stuff. And spirit guides, things like that. And she's like, "Oh, but you know what, Dave? That's how you find out if what other people are into." There was this guy I used to work with, older guy. Well, he's not that much older than me anymore. He was, probably early 60s. And I mentioned something to him one day. Well, come to find out, this guy has been interested in Course in Miracles. He taught transcendental meditation when he was younger. I mean, it's like, you never know. You really never
That's
know.
That's right.
So, part
you
of gotta it
take
is,
a rest.
One of the things she used to say, show people with your actions. You don't have to talk about it. You don't have to, but that's true also. But I just, I'm seeking other like-minded people, I want people to talk, be able to talk to about this stuff with. Because sometimes it I don't know what that limits you. It certainly not limits it. It God, what's the word? It not ostracized. You're set back. You know what I mean? It's like all of a sudden these people things kind of fade away, and there's nobody to talk to about certain things anymore. And I think the Course in Miracles that too is that you're going to find friends and people and things just dropping away, and you may not even notice that it happens. But as your vibration raises, as you raise your vibration, you're not attracting the same kind of things you used to attract at the other level. So you just have to be open to anything new. So the book
it's
is. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I was just thinking in terms of Esther Hicks. She talks about the art of allowing. The Secret talks about the law of attraction, and it's really one and the same. And we're the only ones that set those roadblocks up that impede our progress. when we open ourselves to the flow. And, you know, for me, it's so important, I don't know about you, to align myself with people, places, and things that raise my level of vibration. And, you know, I don't think of it as a selfish thing, because as my consciousness raises, it raises the consciousness of others, too. I mean, it's very symbiotic.
Yeah, that's true, and you're right. It's not selfish, and selfish is an interesting word, because I think selfish is a good thing. Certainly not at the expense or hurting someone else, but hey, this is your journey. I mean, you know what I mean? You're here to learn, to grow, and if you're not focusing on that, which is on yourself, selfish, right? I mean, then you're not doing what you came here to do.
That's a form of self-love, isn't it? And you can't love another person until you love yourself. So if you're following your passions or your bliss, as Joseph Campbell says, or not allowing anything to take you from consistent moments of joy, like Esther Hicks says, then you're headed in the direction that you set out on. I mean, that's where these passions evolve. And I would like to explore a little bit how you actually came into writing. You said you'd studied the craft. When did you realize that you wanted to write? Was it when you started doing the blog, or had there always been a desire to do that? Because you said that your creativity was not encouraged as a child, and you certainly strike me as an extremely creative person, so you must have had a lot of pent-up creativity just waiting to burst forth.
Yes, because, you know, my father was a businessman, and his father before him was a businessman, and I that was just what I was supposed to be, you know, as far as anybody was concerned. And, you know, anything creative, writing, art, all those types of things were just kind of electives in school, if you will. But it's a hobby. It's not, you know, you got to study accounting, you got to study business, you got to study whatever. And that's what I did, and I just kind of fell into that. And then life happened, and all of a sudden, I'm realizing at like 54 years old, I think, is when this started happening. You know, 2007, I think it was. I don't know. I'm 57 right now, so those numbers don't work out. But I started writing a book 3 years ago at 54, so it was a few years before that when all this spiritual stuff started happening. And to answer your question, no, I didn't grow up thinking that I wanted to write. You know, people had told me from time to time, geez, you write well. I used to write my wife letters in college and stuff, and she used to always say, wow, you're a really good writer, and you know, stuff like that. But, you know, I liked to read, and I would read novels and think, oh, God, how does anybody do that? How can you keep track of all that? How can you write so many words and make them all work in such a beautiful way, you know? It was something that I could get limiting thoughts, right? I mean, it was like, I could never do that. When I started writing the blog, I liked doing that. And I was getting some good feedback from people. And I would read them and think, well, you know what, God, this sounds pretty good. So, but I wasn't, when I studied the craft, it wasn't until after I started writing my novel when I said, wow, hey, look, if I'm going to do this, I'm going to do this right. If I'm going to write a novel, I want to know what I'm doing. Because when I started out, I didn't, Dave. I mean, you know what, right? I mean, I had no idea about that. I was always pretty smart in school, so, you know, I could pick things up, and, you know, I knew some stuff. I read a lot, so I kind of knew how books should sound, because, you know, that's a big part of it, too. I mean, if you don't know what novels are supposed to sound like and read like, it's a little hard to go there. So I at least had that going for me. But when I started writing it, I probably own about 80 books on writing, and I probably read most of them. I mean, I just kind of went nuts over the 3 years. Every time
you immersed yourself.
I did. Every time I'd find a book that was, especially now, if you have a Kindle, you can buy books for like $1.99 and $2, $3, $4,
yeah.
You know, some of these.
Yeah.
And some of them are, there's a lot of good books about writing, and there's a lot of books that aren't so good. And I started finding out that a lot of them were saying the same things, you know, so it's like, okay, that just solidified some of those things. You know, I read books on story structure and on dialogue and characterization and all, you name it, you know. And so I start trying to build that into my writing. And I believe it's made a difference. As a matter of fact, my cousin, the other guy who was writing the book that we would write together. After I started reading some of these books, we started butting heads because I'd always start talking about this, you know, and like, Dan, you really got to read this. You really got to learn this stuff. This is how, you know, and he would get all, you know what? What does this mean? He'd say, like, I'm going to stop writing for 2 months and just read about it. Okay. And so it was funny. We would butt heads. And his big point was, all you need is a good story. Story is everything. And yes, granted, you do need a good story, but if you don't know how to tell it, and if you can't keep people turning pages, you know, there's an art to, as you know, there's an art to it. You know, you can tell stories lots of different ways, but, you know, the good writer will tell a story to keep you, you know, turning those pages. Oh my God, I got to find out what's going on. And,
that's right.
You know, they don't dump all the information on you at once. They feed it to you a little bit at a time, and then all of a sudden there's a twist, and, you know, that's the kind of stuff I like. And so I wanted to learn how to do it. So, I didn't know anything really going in, but I learned a lot in the last 3 years, and I keep learning. When I see books now, if I see a book, I'll buy it. And here's the thing. A lot of those books I felt came to me, well, I attracted them, but they showed up when I needed them, and they showed up for a reason. I would sometimes, a book would happen to come into my awareness, and I couldn't discount it. It was like, nope, this is here for a reason, so I'm buying it. Boom. So, and that's kind of the attitude. That's probably why I have so many of them, but it works. It works for me. So
it does. It's amazing. That is a direct demonstration of manifesting things in your life, and I love hearing about that. I was going to ask you earlier, and maybe you would have some other examples of ways you've manifested your heart's desires along the way.
I believe I have in with my job, that things happen that you would normally say, oh my God, it's a tragedy. I was downsized from two different jobs, and each time I know now it was for a reason. You know, I worked as an IT manager for a bank here in town. I worked for a couple banks, you know, so I was in business. I was a manager, and we got bought. The bank got bought out, and it was a year later. They kept me on through the conversion and the transition and all that. And then all of a sudden, I got a pink slip. Well, you know, we're going to manage this out of Buffalo, and we don't need an IT manager here in Auburn. So, okay, boom, lost my job. Well, at that point, the unemployment department was running some kind of deal. Well, that happened. I got my pink slip on October 11th, 2001. It was 1 month after the towers went down. Nobody was hired.
Wow.
So they had a program where you could, if you wanted to change your field, what you do, that they would help you do it. So I found they had a program that put me through a year of night classes at Syracuse University for web design. So, and it was an awesome program. It was five classes. They were one night a week. It lasted for a year. The tuition was like $10,000. They paid for my books. They paid for my gas to drive from Auburn to Syracuse once a week. It was just great. Five courses. I aced them all. I loved it. You know, I loved it. That's what really got me going in that direction. So I was out of work for 14 months. So, yeah, it was kind of a difficult time, but, you know, it all happens for a reason. So I did get another job here in town at the college. I was a little disappointed. I took about a pay cut, but the biggest disappointment was I had wanted a job in web design. I wanted to pursue this. So I started doing that.
Yes.
You know, and because, again, when you talk about intention, these intentions were, some of them were maybe subconscious, others not so subconscious, but I was heading in this creative direction, in a direction where I would have the flexibility to allow me to do other things, which was writing, which I didn't know at the time. So I worked there at that college for 6 years and got downsized again. I guess the other one you couldn't call it downsizing, but this one was. We had a lot of contract work, and some of the contracts were drying up, and they let go most of the staff. And I was doing the same kind of work. I was doing computer work, network administrator. But I had been building up this business on the side. I was actually getting paid to do some of these websites for people. So when that job ended, again, what am I going to do? I'm like 50 years old. Where am I going to get a job? Blah, blah, blah. And here's a program, again, from the unemployment department called SEAP, Self-Employment Assistance Program. They would pay you unemployment, and you would not have to go look for a job as long as you were going to start your own business. Then they would help you.
Wow.
You would meet with advisors, and they would help you with a business plan and all this kind of stuff. So I went through that. And I started my web design company, Website Solutions of Central New York. And that's how I got my start in that. So I've been doing that full time for 5 years now. And like I said, it gives me the flexibility to work on writing. You know, even when we go travel, I don't have to ask for vacation time. Oh, we're gone. I'm going up to Canada again. I need 4 or 5 days. You know, and God, I think 1 year we did that 4 times. So it's just great. And all along the way, I can look back and say, oh my God, I thought of this. I said, this is what I want. And it happened. You know, we don't know how. And in the beginning, you don't know the hows. You know, how is this going to happen? Oh my. And so many times we go, oh, I can't imagine how it's going to happen. You ever hear yourself saying that? Like, God, when I say that now, I want to slap myself. I can't imagine how this is going to happen. Well, Dave, boy, that's a problem, because if you can't imagine how it's going to happen, then it ain't going to happen.
Imagination is so powerful. It's so important.
But you know what? Mike Dooley had a great analogy about the hows. He calls them the dreaded hows, I think, I think it's something like that. And I remember this, and I use it, I think about this all the time, and I tell this to people. He uses the analogy of a GPS. Now, with a GPS, you really get a GPS because you don't know how to get someplace, right? So what do you tell it?
That's
right. You
tell
it where you are, you tell it where you are, and you tell it where you want to be. And it figures it out. So it's like the universe. Tell it where you, okay, well, I know where I am, not right now. Tell it where you want to be. That's your intention. And let it rip. You know, just move in that direction. And like you said before, the art of allowing, allow these things to happen. You know, don't freak out if you lose your job, because it's going to lead to something else. If you've got an intention out there. What's that?
I think it's so important, the lessons that you learned along the way, embracing the totality of your life, recognizing that everything happens for a reason, and not questioning it, not bemoaning it, and embracing it and welcoming it as part of of the unfoldment of the dream, whatever that is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the thing is, life is a self-fulfilling prophecy, and you're the prophet, right?
That's right.
When you think about
that way,
like you get to choose. Now, it doesn't seem like that, and a lot of people will tell you otherwise, but I believe that's the way it is, and it's working for me.
Well, that's great. Absolutely. I just keep my sight looking forward.
Mm-hmm.
I have a lot of dreams. I have some definite intentions of where I plan to be at some point in my future life.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing when I look back at a life that was very much fractured, and a lot of things that I used to bemoan, I now recognize as just silver linings in what had seemed to be dark clouds, because it's all brought me to my today. And as you say, everything is happening at the same time. And when I do that, I give strength to myself at past points in my life, those elusive past points in my life, and to my future self, and to all aspects of my soul. And it's an amazing experience for me. And I love talking with somebody that takes a metaphysical approach to life. I think it's wonderful that you're being true to yourself, because if you can't be true to yourself, what's the purpose of being? And I really look forward to hearing more about your career. I'd love to have you back on the show after your next book is out, or just to have a metaphysical discussion. For the time being, we're coming up to the end of the hour. I don't know if you. I'd like to find out where your book is available, and if you have any parting words that you'd like to leave with us.
Okay. Well, my books are available locally in Auburn at the Center, which is a wonderful spa that does very metaphysical. Marianne Giacona runs the place, and she's been kind enough to let me put my books in her gift shop. But she does energy. They do energy healing and acupuncture and massage and all that. It's a wonderful place. So it's called The Center in Auburn, New York, and at Creekside Books in Skinny Ellis. My book is there. And, of course, it's available at Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com, and at Amazon it's also available as a Kindle, in Kindle format. And my website, you can go to my website. There's I built a little video trailer, and there's other information on there. And the address for that is www.davidhomick.com. So,
thank you, Dave.
I'm sorry. I guess we're running out of time, so that's cool.
We're coming right up to the end of the hour, and I really appreciate your time tonight, and I wish you the best success and that your wildest dreams are yet to come.
Thank you, and same to you. Namaste.
Namaste. Okay. So once again, we come to a close. Now we can pause and reflect upon the idea we are all united through the diverse tapestry of our individual gifts. There is no real thing as separation except in our own minds. We are each unique expressions of the ultimate source of our beings. We are spiritual beings having a human experience who are having a spiritual experience. Have a great week, and remember, whatever you dream, you can realize.